Okay, papers two?
Yes.
Takashi?
Yes. Okay, so the papers two's IFRS 5. The interpretations committee had its last discussion on these issues in this May and decided to bring the issues to the board to ask about the next steps for these issues. So we took the issues to the board in July and with a suggestion to divide these issues into those to be considered in the short term and those to be considered in the longer term. And the board generally agreed with the suggestion. Following the board's decision in July for this meeting, we have prepared four agenda papers. In the first paper, agenda paper 2A, is to report back on the ISB's discussion and decisions on IFRS 5 issues. And agenda papers 2B and 2C propose an agenda decision for short-term issues. And agenda paper 2D has been prepared to also propose an agenda decision for the rest of the issues, which we think are too broad for the interpretations committee to undertake. So moving on to agenda paper 2A, there are two IFRS 5 topics we brought to the board in July. The first one relates to the next steps for the various unresolved IFRS 5 issues, and the second one relates to a proposal to address one of those issues through an annual improvement, the disclosure issue. For the first topic, next steps for the IFRS 5 issues, we thought that the accumulation of the unresolved IFRS 5 issues was a possible sign of a need to review IFRS 5, and such a review would require a comprehensive review. So we proposed to the board that these issues should be considered comprehensively rather than individually. Having said that, consistent with the views of some committee members, among all these IFRS 5 issues, we also thought that there were some of them that could be addressed relatively quickly on the basis of the committee's past discussions. Therefore, we propose to the board to divide these issues into short-term and longer-term issues. And for the longer-term issues, since the board's discussions in July, the ISB has published a request for view 2015 general consultation with the comments due by the end of this year. And in that document, a reference to IFRS 5 issues is made in the section Possible Additional Research Project. With respect to the short-term issues, there are three of them, and two of those are to be discussed during this meeting for a tentative agenda decision. The other short-term issue relates to the disclosure one, which is another issue we brought to the board in July for a separate consideration. This disclosure issue relates to what seems like a conflict of disclosure requirements between IFRS 5 and IFRS 12. We proposed to the board that clarification should be made through an annual improvement, and the board agreed with the proposal. And for this issue, we're now in the balloting process, and we expect that the annual improvement ED will be published in Q4 this year. So do you have any comments in relation to this agenda paper 2A?
Comments?
Okay, none appearing, let's press on.
Okay. So agenda paper 2B, it relates to an extent of impairment losses that should be allocated to non-current assets within a disposal group. More specifically, whether an impairment loss can be allocated to non-current assets to the extent that it reduces the carrying amount of such assets below their fair value less cost sale or their value in use. The Interpretations Committee discussed this issue in May, and at that meeting, we presented an analysis that such an allocation should not be restricted by either fair value less cost to sell or value in use of non-current assets. But in the light of the other two unresolved measurement issues, at the time we proposed that this issue should be considered along with those two other issues rather than proposing an agenda decision. And after the discussion, the Interpretations Committee decided to take all the IFRS 5 issues to the board, including this one. And during the Interpretations Committee meeting, there were comments highlighting that, unlike the other two measurement issues, this issue could be addressed within the confines of IFRS 5 because the issue is limited to the measurement of non-current assets that are within the measurement scope of IFRS 5. And taking that into consideration, we recommended to the board that this issue should be addressed separately through an agenda decision, and the board agreed. Consistent with the analysis presented to you in May, we are of the view that paragraph 23 of IFRS 5 provides sufficient guidance on the extent to which an impairment loss can be allocated to non-current assets. This is because paragraph 23 does not refer to paragraph 105 of IAS 36. On the basis of analysis and the result of the agenda criteria assessment, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee should not add this issue to its agenda. So the question to the Interpretations Committee is, do you agree with the staff recommendation that it should not add this issue to its agenda? And if the answer to the question to that question is yes, does the Interpretations Committee agree with the wordings provided in Appendix A?
Comments on this issue? Bruce?
Thanks, Wayne. I don't agree with the conclusion that we've reached here. I spent a bit of time looking at it, and I guess I'm my major problem with it is the way we're talking around the saying that that paragraph 105 is not included. It does not, you know, is not included within it. I mean, I guess my concern with it is that I think their principles in IAS 36 have been laid down. I think they've been very clearly laid down in terms of how we allocate an impairment, where there is a limit in terms of where it should be recognised to. The fact that it hasn't specifically referenced the paragraph is irrelevant to me because that paragraph is talking 105 is talking to what's happening in terms of the others, and I just think we're. I just think that when you turn around and say, well, hang on, we've got 104 specifically referenced, but not 105, when 105 is specifically talking about the application of 104, I just get very concerned that we're taking a principle that's in IAS 36 and we're saying no, because we haven't specifically referenced that paragraph, which is clearly identifying and the application of the one before it. I think it's a very dangerous people to get. I appreciate the argument that's been made around unit of account. And I mean, I accept that the unit of account argument could very well be, hang on, there is a single unit of account. But we've got that in IAS 36 as well. We talk about CGUs, so we're used to having unit of accounts that could be greater than just an asset, which is what we've got. We've got something like a disposal group. I just get very concerned that we're saying we don't think this applies. My view, it should.
Hansu?
I have very similar concern about excluding the paragraph 105. 105, if we exclude it, then we can have several problems. Like, for example, the first one is that the individual asset is not going to be represented by the fair value, so that it could mislead the people in understanding what that information is. And in some extreme cases, the book value of the individual asset could be negative. So that is not consistent with the definition of book value. And also, what I'm concerning about is that, you know, in your analysis, unit of account is the one that we have to concern. And you know, if the unit of account is the disposal group, not the individual asset, then I think we don't have to get this paragraph 23, because if only the group is our concern, we don't need to give the information about individual asset to the people at all. So that if we have to go for this decision, I think we have to go for some kind of consideration of erasing or deleting paragraph 23 out of IFRS 5. So kind of a big decision I think we have to go for if we follow your decision.
I think just for clarification's sake, we're dealing here with a situation in which it's conceivable you have to pay somebody to take this asset off your hands for one reason or another, whether recognized or unrecognized liabilities related to the asset. And we did, I believe, reach out to board members who were here when five was done, didn't we? That may have been before yours came into the issue, but Michael, yeah, we did. And their view was, well, if you have to pay somebody to take it off your hands, then it's negative. And it's counterintuitive to what we usually think of, but their view at least was that if the unit of account was in that situation, you had to deal with it.
But if I can just add, yeah, there were mixed views among those people that we spoke to about whether you would actually record an additional liability to reflect that negative fair value. They agreed with that approach of it's the unit of account, it's a single unit account, but not necessarily that different views on whether you would actually go next.
I recall the difference was between the staff and the board. I think the board members were of a single view, but the staff who worked on five weren't. But anyway, that's background for those. Reinhardt?
I agree with the staff's analysis and with the agenda decision, although I think, and I understand the conflict that exists between IS 36 and IFRS 5, but I do believe, as others have said, the unit of account is different under IFRS 5 as compared to IS 36. What I do suggest, though, is that the agenda decision be clarified to distinguish this from the situation that is on the medium to longer term agenda of the board, where the disposal group includes things like financial assets. I think the situation we're dealing with here is where the disposal group consists of exclusively non-current assets. And so I think if that is clarified, I would certainly be supportive of the agenda decision.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah, I also agree with where the staff's got to. I think the principle that IFRS 5 introduces is that you are looking at this collection of assets as the unit of account for the impairment test. And if for whatever reason you're not going to collect the aggregate fair values, then you ought to be booking an impairment charge, and that reflects what's happening. So I think that the staff has the right answer. And I'm comfortable with where the agenda decision goes. And I just, the word that Takashi used when he introduced this was the impairment loss should not be restricted. And I just wondered if we could get that into the agenda decision, because you don't actually need to allocate the impairment loss, because the assets held for sale will be presented on a single line. You don't actually need to allocate it. You're looking at the aggregate carrying value and the fair value less cost of sale of the disposal group. So it seems to me that the question is, should the loss be restricted by the fair value of the individual assets? And the answer to that is no. So I'm comfortable with where we've got to. I would share Reinhardt's comment that we are quite close to answering the unit of account question that, for the other issues, we've decided not to answer. And I think we should be clear as to how we're able to distinguish this from the valid couple point of questions that have been put in the request for views.
Pablo, I'll get you last here, if I may. John?
I agree with the staff view. I mean, I think that we're only talking about non-current assets that are in the scope of the measurement requirements of IFRS 5. We're not dealing with financial assets that are not in the scope. We're not dealing with the other impairment measurement issues where the impairment loss exceeds the carrying value of the assets. We're talking about whether there's a restriction applied to the allocation just to the non-current assets that are in the scope of the measurement requirements of IFRS 5. And I think paragraph 105 is not included specifically because you're not restricted. You're looking at the actual impairment loss for the disposal group and absorbing all of that into the non-current assets within that disposal group. So 105, I think, is deliberately excluded in the reference. So I would agree with the staff position. And I don't think this is a different issue than the unit of account issue, which we deal with in the other situations, because that's talking about assets that are outside the scope of IFRS 5 measurement requirements.
Pablo?
I agree with the staff analysis and recommendation. I would, however, say that even in case we're just dealing with non-financial assets, I was thinking about the case where a disposal group is formed is composed of repossessed assets stemming from foreclosure. So in that case, my concern would be whether the lower bound is set on the fair value of the disposal group versus the fair value of the individual assets that compose that group. Because you may have cases in which different foreclosed assets are pooled together and sold to, we're seeing the case recently, they're pooled and sold to hedge funds or sovereign wealth funds. And trying to make a gain in respect to the fair value of the individual assets within the group. So I think the conclusion by the staff is right, but maybe some tweak on the analysis would be necessary in order to make it clear that the lower bound would be either the disposal group or, in some cases, the individual asset, the fair value of the individual asset.
Not sure about that last one. We'll follow up on it. Okay, I'm losing track of who's first in and first out, so we'll just start with Charlotte, Martin. Andrew, did you want to come in?
Yes.
And then Bruce for a second time. So, Charlotte?
I also agree with the staff analysis. I remember the discussion at the time focusing on the unit of account. What I'm concerned with, that we sort of separated off the issue of when it goes negative in total, and that isn't dealt with, which I can imagine would be a sort of a corollary from people starting to apply this. And I'm not sure why, I think that directly follows from this. I'm not sure why we've parked that into the medium term.
We did have a discussion in earlier meetings about whether there should be a liability recognised in respect of a negative fair value disposal group. And there are different views, and I don't think we did manage to reach a consensus on what the answer is in that circumstance.
I understand. I just think it leaves it even more open, because you read the agenda decision and not sure whether you're floored at zero. Does that automatically come in, or is it negative? Do I have a negative asset? I just think it leaves it a lot more questionable, even if people weren't worried about it before.
Martin?
I agree with the staff. However, I believe it's just an intermediate step, because what I really miss is a solution for the scoped out measurement instruments, like financial instruments, but also for current assets like inventories or so. I mean, if I would be an analyst, I might got the view that the disposal group is in a way fair value, or at least with a value which could support, or which is at least at that level of fair value or even higher. But it might be that at the point in time of closing, I always then have to realize losses. And that's, I believe, is a little bit odd. But that's related to the unit of cash.
Yeah, and that's hard in the short term.
And therefore I said intermediate.
Okay. Gary, board member privilege.
Thank you. And Tony had said something that triggered a question. I don't know if it's to Tony or if it's back to the staff, but I think whether I'm inclined to agree with the staff view, I think the answer works better when the disposal group is disposed as one group. However, in practice, oftentimes a disposal group is disposed of piecemeal. So wouldn't that start arguing you have to start allocating some of the impairment loss to the individual pieces that are likely to be sold individually? Because you could certainly see a case where, as you derecognize portions of the stuff, you've got some either excess or deficit loss allocation, you know, that's left over. So how would you react to that?
I think we should be okay, because the definition of a disposal group is that it is going to be disposed of in a single transaction.
But things change in practice. I mean, that could be day one accounting, day two and day three, this brilliant idea to sell it, you know, falls apart. You still want to sell it, and now you might have three smaller disposal groups.
And I think IFRS 5 would require you to reassess as you go along. If facts and circumstances change, if your plans change, then you would fall out of compliance with disposal group classification based on your original plan, but you might obviously have new plans that would generate or give rise to perhaps three disposal groups, as in your example.
Which this committee dealt with within the last year or so about you know, when they're playing changes, but you still intend to dispose of it, stays there.
Okay.
Instinctively, I think that comes across as a little bit too simple, you know, just the way things work out in practice.
Andrew?
I also agree with the staff. I think there is a different unit of account, IFRS 5. It's the disposal group as a whole, or the non-current assets in the disposal group. That's the other debate. IAS 36, I think fundamentally it is the individual asset, but the cash generating unit is a mechanism to estimate recoverable amount where you can't do so on an individual asset basis. So I agree with the analysis. I do think there are some drafting enhancements we could make to the agenda decision, which we can presumably handle offline.
Philippe, board member privilege, and then we'll go to...
I think it could be helpful. Could be helpful for the readers of this agenda decision to pick up the point made by Tony that there is no need to allocate the loss to any specific asset because the unit of account is the group as a whole. I think that would help reading the logics of this decision.
As I recall, when I discussed it with the staff and questioned, why are we allocating? If you've declared that the disposal group is this group. And the answer was, I think, essentially what Gary raised, that, well, things don't always go as planned. And if you sell off a piece of it, you don't want to be recognizing gains and losses on individual assets within the disposal group. Philippe?
I agree with the point made by Gary, but I think Michael's respond that in principle, a single transaction means you don't sell those assets by bits. If you plan to, or if you have to plan, or to change your plan, then you have to recreate smaller disposal groups, and then the loss would be allocated as a whole to those different groups. But I think maybe it doesn't have its place in this short thing because it's not a how to do document for IFRS 5. But still, I think that this notion that because it is a single transaction, the loss will be realized as a whole, hence you don't have to allocate to any specific asset in that group, I think is quite helpful for the readers to understand why we came, the staff, why we came to this conclusion.
Point taken. Bruce, I'm not ignoring you. I just want, you're going for the second shot here. So Bonnie?
No, when Tony mentioned why would you need to allocate, I guess I was just looking up the disclosure provisions. I think you have to disclose the major asset and liability categories, which in my mind that I believe you would have to allocate then the loss that goes along with those to show what those are. Now, maybe those are very high-level categories depending on what assets are in those assets and liabilities. It could be one, it could be multiple. So I do think we do have an allocation issue, I guess, in how you go about kind of allocating that loss. But I also echo what Charlotte was saying, that the next logical question is, particularly if you have, you know, an asset group that you have to pay somebody to take, is do you record a liability below once you write everything down to zero or not? They are a bit commingled with each other.
Yep. And I fell off that cliff very early. So, Bruce?
Sorry, I'm just going to come back on the last couple of points, as much as I'm being beaten up by everybody on it. Thank you for your support, by the way.
I'm supporting you.
Yeah, no, I mean, just to reiterate my point, I mean, I just get concerned that, I mean, when I read IFRS 5, the references to IAS 36 are littered throughout it, which means I think that there's a very close tie between those standards. I think what we're doing here is we're turning around and saying, unless you can point directly to a paragraph number, there are principles in IAS 36 that do not apply. I get very, very concerned about that in a principles-based framework. I think IAS 36 is a principle around how we allocate impairments. I think the fact that IAS 5 says in allocating 104 and directly talks to it, we've got to be, it's a dangerous, dangerous place to go. I was also going to make the same comment, I think, that a number of people have made around the fact that you do need to do some sort of allocation. I've seen the same as Gary in practice. I was going to make the same comment. Things don't always work out where you dispose of this in a one-off transaction. That's a utopic world. You do need to understand where those things are. My only other comment was, I'm very concerned that with this interpretation goes out with this view, I think we're going to get a flood of questions on this, the unit. I think we're basically defining something here. We're setting out a principle on how we think we should measure these units. And I just think that could open up more questions than it's going to answer. Yeah, might be.
I'd like to bring this to a close. I think we're starting to recycle. But Sandy, John, Tony?
I guess I would agree with what Bonnie
said. And Yongsu, I'm sorry.
I had the same reaction to the comment that Tony made. But, you know, as I read this and I think about how investors and users of the financial statement would look at it, the minute you take a loss, whether you allocate it to the non-current assets or not, you're going to owe someone an explanation about why they're impaired now and they weren't before. And and I know you may be bringing other liabilities with it, but I think they're the real question for users of the financial statements is why this and why now, just because you bundled some things together. I think that that's the question that most investors would have of the disclosure.
John?
To partially support Bruce, I think the staff analysis of the requirements of IFRS 5 is correct. I think this whole discussion is evidence why those medium and long-term issues really need to be dealt with sooner rather than later, because a lot of this discussion has to do with inherent problems within IFRS 5 itself, which go back to those other issues of unit of account, which assets are in scope, and measurements. So I think this conversation is evidence of that, but I think the staff analysis here is of the standard is correct.
Yongsu?
I just want to make a very short comment. You know, we have to think about what we have. We are providing information. We are providing information for the use for helping people's decision. And if the allocation does not provide correct information, that could confuse people. That's what I'm worrying about. And especially when, you know, the Bonnie said about the, you know, the major liabilities and assets. And if it is the people's needs, then we have to provide information which is correct about the amounts of it. And also, if the assets are sold separate or individually, then we have to tell the people individual assets correct amount. So we have to think about more about, you know, why we are allocating the group amount into the individual assets.
Tony, last call.
Yeah, I was going to react to some of the other comments and say that my point was less to do with allocation and more to do with the fact that you don't restrict the amount of the loss. So putting disclosure and stuff to one side, the standard's absolutely specific. You don't restrict the amount of the loss. I think it's quite clear, and the staff's got it quite clear. And I actually think that's what provides useful information, because you're selling these assets as a group, and it doesn't matter whether the aggregate fair value of those assets exceeds the price you're going to get for the group. You're selling them as a group. That's why they're classified as a disposal group. And so the accounting actually provides useful information. And my key point is that you therefore don't restrict the loss.
Okay, I think the divide is fairly clear. Either you agree with the staff analysis, subject to several people have said they want to provide some wording changes on the decision, and that's fine. Can I just do a show of hands? How many support doing this?
Ten.
That's it. Okay, we'll go ahead. Please provide the staff with your wording suggestions. Okay. Now 2C.
Okay. Now, agenda paper 2C, it deals with the issue as to whether and how to eliminate transactions between continuing and a discontinued operations in the income statement. Should an entity eliminate in full before determining presentation of continuing and discontinued operations? V1, eliminate transactions with some adjustments reflecting future relationship. V2, or not eliminate intergroup transactions at all. V3. As with the issue we just discussed, we presented this issue to you in May, and after discussion, the interpretations committee decided to take it to the board as part of a package of IFRS 5 issues. In May, in our original proposal, we presented a view that B1 would be the only way to meet the requirements in IFRS 5. However, because we were aware that there could be situations in which V2 presentation would provide better information than V1 information, we proposed to require V2 information in the income statement. In response to this analysis and a proposal, many of the committee members agreed with the staff's view that V1 would be appropriate under current IFRS. At the same time, they expressed concern over making due to informational requirement, because such information would be more suitable in the notes, and it could be departing from the presentation of what actually happened. So taking into account the discussion of the interpretations committee, we thought that the issue could be addressed through an agenda decision based on view one, and consequently we recommended to the board that this issue should be addressed separately through an agenda decision, and the board agreed. Consistent with the analysis presented to you in May, we believe that under the current IFRS, there are no requirements overriding the consolidation requirements of IFRS 10, and thus view one should be followed. Additionally, if an entity thinks that V1 information is not the best way to communicate its results for a particular period, we think that the entity should disclose additional information in accordance with paragraph 30 of IFRS 5. We think that any amendment requiring V2 presentation in the income statement would require a broader project than the Interpretations Committee could undertake. Therefore, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee should not add this issue onto its agenda to amend IFRS 5 to require V2 presentation in the income statement. So the questions to you are, do you agree with the staff's recommendation that it should not add this issue to its agenda? And if you do you agree with the wordings provided in the Appendix A?
Comments? Bruce?
Thanks. I agree with the staff's recommendation on this. This one I kind of agreed with. I mean, I think that the main one to me was that if we do have alternative views, we're not going to solve them, and this committee is going to have to be a big one. So I think for the moment it's fine. I guess the only concern I did have is I'm very much aware, especially in our jurisdiction, that this will be a major change for some companies in how they've been doing it. And I guess my only concern was in the agenda decision, we're kind of coming out saying this is how you should be doing it. I know we've had these discussions around agenda decisions before, but this is going to be quite a big change for us with a number of listed entities.
Mikhail?
I think that we all agree that view one gives not a very good information, and especially in the example that was given, of course an extreme example, but anyhow, it must give the wrong impression of the present or the continued operation and the discontinued operation. And I realized that I was the only one arguing for view three, and when you put it this way, do not eliminate intergroup transactions, then for sure view three is not correct. But if you look on this B86 or 84 or whatever we refer to, elimination is between entities. And in my mind, we should eliminate between the discontinued operation and the continued operation. It's a matter of presentation. And you should, so to speak, have the presentation format of the view three then. If you look an example that the discontinued operation would have been a segment, which I guess is quite often the case, you would have view three presented all along until you do this jump over to view one and have a totally different result from this segment. And in my mind, this will be a very strange way of reporting, I must say. So if we should conclude that view one is the only one that is correct, I agree with you, Bruce, that then we give a direction that you have to do something, that you should instead use your judgment and report in a better way.
Andrew?
I'm not sure the analysis or the agenda decision answers the real question. I think it's clear that the disclosure of the results of discontinued operation is a disaggregation of the consolidated result, and therefore it must come out of a post-elimination consolidated amount. So that's the whether you eliminate, and I do think the answer must be yes, but isn't the real question how you eliminate? View one in the paper just says eliminate without qualifying that, and view two says eliminate but make some unspecified adjustments. So I think I preferred the way I think the previous paper articulated the question, which is whether you would always have to eliminate against the originating component, be that continuing or discontinued, or whether there's some flexibility depending on whether you think that if it's a profit, that profit is going to be internalised after the disposal. So I'm not quite clear. This decision just says eliminate. It doesn't get into the how to eliminate or whether there is that flexibility. And I think that's the real question, which if we think it's a judgment, perhaps we could say so. If we think actually, I guess the intuitive way would be to eliminate against the component that earned that profit. If we think that's the only answer, you know, we should say so. I prefer to have some judgment, I have to say, on this.
Reinhardt and Martin?
I have a very similar view to Andrew. I understand the requirements in IFRS 10 to eliminate, but as we've talked about and as this paper and the previous agenda paper suggests that there are, in an instance where that disposed or operation that is being discontinued, there will be continuing transactions between the entity and that disposed operation. There is certainly merit to showing that information, because that's relevant information to the users to understand what are the transactions that have occurred between the entity and the disposed group that will be continued on the basis of arrangements that are made as in connection with the disposition. And so I think it is important that that information be presented. Like others have said, I'm aware that in practice people have been applying a view two, perhaps a view three type presentation. And so if the conclusion of the majority is that the only answer is to the view one answer, to eliminate everything prior to presenting the continued and discontinued operation, that needs to be clear, and then there needs to be some wording to make sure that what entities have done is not seen as being an error. Like Andrew, I would prefer that there be some judgment in terms of how the elimination is being performed.
Young Soo?
I agree with the staff that view one is the one that we have to go for, but I am kind of agree with the other people that view two is providing more useful information to the people. But view two information is more like as if or pro forma information that should not be appeared in the face of the financial statements. So maybe we can suggest in the agenda decision that view two information can be provided by the footnote. And if we add that sentence into the agenda decision, maybe we can give them more guidance about this issue.
And what would that guidance be? I'm sorry, I was...
Well, providing view to information based on the judgment they can provide, what's going to be continued, what's going to be discontinued in the footnote, not on the face of the financial statements.
I'm going to come back to the judgment comment because I'm not clear what that judgment would be, but let's get all of the views on the table here. Martin and Tony?
I believe that if we want to have further disclosures, we need to have an amendment or another issue which would generate a broader discussion with the board, I assume. And for me, if these intra-group transactions are of that importance, and specifically the margins I could generate intra-group, for me the question would be, well, would it be the same if the discontinued operation itself later on has a relation with another provider? Do they have the same economic conditions? And that is not assured, because everything is under control of one unit. So that means the transfer price is in a way negotiable. And I'm not sure whether this additional information then would be of that importance.
Gary, board member privilege. Excuse me.
Yeah, thank you. The I would support view one in the interest of getting clarity and closure on it, but I actually prefer view two. And in terms of, if you think of, I think once you go into discontinued operations, you've sort of broken the full consolidation view of IFRS 10. It's already showing net and, you know, segregating stuff that otherwise would be consolidating. So if you think of if the if you've got extensive intercompany transactions that the continuing operation, let's say, is buying services from the discontinued operation, to would probably naturally self-eliminate in consolidation, but when you've got a continuing discontinued operations, you don't. So, but if you fully eliminate them, however, once the discontinued operation is gone and you intend to buy, continue to buy those services from the sold unit, doesn't seem sense to me to have continuing operations reporting eliminating those expenses, and then once it's sold, you start grossing the expenses up and say, well, in the footnotes, we've eliminated it, but this cost is going to continue once it's sold. That just doesn't strike me as very useful. And I think part of the negotiations of selling business units, in part, is how many of the things that you've been buying or selling from each other are going to continue post-disposal. It's a very big consideration if there is, in fact, you know, that sort of activity. And to not show it when you still own the discontinued operations and it comes back once it's sold, that just, it's not very useful. Because the whole focus of this thing is what is the going forward company going to look like? That's the purpose of continuing operations.
Okay, I've got John, Bob, Tony, and Ton.
I agree with the staff recommendation. I think it seems to me fairly clear that under IFRS 10, you eliminate in full the transactions, not just the profit, and therefore you're eliminating the transactions because they're within the group, and then you're disaggregating that consolidated result into continuing or discontinued. So and there's nothing in IFRS 5 or IAS 1 that would say that you somehow reverse the consolidation process. So I agree with the staff. I think it gives a meaningful disclosure on the face? Not really, in where you have significant transactions. But I think, as the standards are currently worded, the response to that is to provide disclosure around what those transactions actually are. And maybe going forward, there's a better approach towards presenting continuing and discontinued, which is allows more the reflection of transactions between. But I think the staff analysis is, the current standard is correct.
Bob?
The CFP proposal and the agenda decision that's in our paper is consistent with my recollection of the May meeting. Although, I'll be honest, when we came into that meeting back in the spring, my view two appealed to me because I agree with the staff's analysis. You have to follow the elimination, but it didn't seem to give really good disclosure. I realize there's disclosures and notes, but didn't on the face of the financial statements, didn't seem to provide the best information. But then my recollection of that meeting was that we reached a consensus around view one. Now it's when we bring up the issue about how to eliminate, I didn't think that was in question. And is that, I'm wondering if that's bringing back this view two type of notion.
Sue?
I was going to make similar comments to what John and Bob just said, which was I thought that at the last discussion on this, interpretations committee was, except for one, I think, agreed that view one was the correct interpretation of the standard. So I think we had differences of opinion in terms of how good or otherwise that might be and how much we needed to supplement that, but I'm not sure that this is the place for that, is it? I thought we were trying to just confirm what are the requirements in the standard while acknowledging that there might be disclosures that would be helpful to help users of financial statements. But we had a discussion about how we might go that extra step and concluded that it was difficult to do, and so we got to view one. So I'm a bit interested that it's sort of been so reopened.
Don?
Yeah, thank you. We, first of all, we believe that view two would result in more relevant information. However, we fully agree with the staff that technically you have to follow view one. We were wondering if we would make a reference to the paragraph B86 of IFRS 10 in the wording of the decision when we have talk about the intra-group transactions. And further, we were a little bit concerned about the text of the 1 to 3, 4th paragraph, starting with referring to paragraph 30 of IFRS 5, the Interpretation Committee also noted that entities may have to provide, and may have is in our view not strong enough. We would have preferred wording as, for example, should if useful or something like that, but may is in our idea too weak.
Donny?
Yeah, I agree with the staff. I think IFRS 10 is clear that you eliminate transactions. I understand the concerns people have about presentation, but I think we're getting dangerously close to what if. So let's present on the face of the income statement what might have happened. In fact, these transactions were between group entities and therefore they should be eliminated. And IFRS 8 gives you flexibility to do something a bit different with segments, if that's the way management looks at it. The discontinued operations footnote gives you the ability to provide more information. And I just think it's a very slippery slope if we go down the route of saying that you can put what if information on the face. So I think IFRS 10 says what it says. I understand there is some diversity in practice, and if there's a way of tweaking these words, so to take Reinhardt's point, we're not telling people that they had an error before, I'd be comfortable with that, but I think this is the right answer. And how you present it, I think, is then a different question, which is beyond the scope of our discussion.
Carl?
Thanks. I agree with staff's conclusion. I don't see room for judgment on elimination under IFRS 10 in this case. I'm much more comfortable with this agenda decision than the previous one. I think this one is crystal clear.
Charlotte?
I agree with the staff's decision. I agree with Tom as well, though I do think the disclosure point should be made stronger, because I think most people at the last discussion thought the pro forma information would be useful. It just wasn't appropriate to be on the face of the balance sheet. And I don't think that comes across in reading the agenda decision, that should be strongly considered, the need to include that, or whatever the wording should be.
Okay. I think we beat it up pretty well. I did want to come back to Andrew, just from my fundamental knowledge. When I learned consolidation accounting, the answer was you know, credit accounts receivable, debit inventory, mm-hmm. for example, in the elimination. And you get out the internal profit. I didn't see a lot of judgment in that exercise back when I learned it, but there were dinosaurs then too. So what, when you say there should be judgment, what are you thinking of?
I said I would prefer to have some flexibility, but I don't object to V1, by the way, from a technical point of view, but I think the agenda decision could be more explicit in saying exactly how you do the elimination. Also taking on board Reinhardt's point, but the judgment would be simply around whether you expect this intra-group profit to be retained within the continuing operations post-disposal, the as-if type approach. I accept the concerns around that getting close to pro forma information that others have raised and fine to go with that, but I don't think consolidation requirements then particularly envisage a further disaggregation. Exactly why IFRS 8 gives you flexibility on how to do so.
Okay, Cal, last call.
Yes, I fully agree with everyone here that there should be no judgment in the sense of that you eliminate and what to eliminate. My surprise is only this, that we say that we eliminate against something when the standard says that we eliminate between something. And in our systems, at least, there is no elimination against something. It's always elimination between something. So to get to the one presentation, you have to adjust in the accounts to get it there, because you will get one set of present, so to speak, continue operations, one set of discontinued, and you will get an elimination in between. In my mind, this is a matter of presentation. Of course, you will have the same total amount, eliminated amount, but it is to give a view of what is discontinued and what is continued. And when you come to this judgment, that you can of course have different margins, etc. But I mean, we run our business in a certain way. We have probably given information to the acquirer or the intended acquirer about this already. We have presented in the segment reporting the best of our judgment of the best result it can be. Or we have rules around transfer pricing and what have you to have arm length distance between the entities. So I mean, it is fairly okay, I would say, to present that. Much more okay than view one, where you end up with a huge gain in the continued operation and a huge loss in discontinued operation, even if everyone understands that it is the opposite.
Put you down as undecided. Okay, let's see if we can wrap this up. Let's start with a show of hands. Taking the point that we could change and tweak the language on the disclosure, I've heard several people say that. So taking that we would do that, how many support the staff recommendation?
Eleven.
That gets it then. Sure, Bonnie.
So I agree with everything. What I don't agree with is that pro forma type information should be required in the disclosures. Perhaps that's my US GAAP SEC hat on, that those types of disclosures are generally left out of the financial statements and put more in a front part of a document for a lot of reasons, because it's kind of a what if type scenario for which you disclose very clearly what those, how you come to those kind of what if. What is the basis for your pro forma? So I struggle with that a bit. Requiring that in the footnotes. And I guess maybe I, by making this may to a will or must or have to, I think that's essentially what the decision is making. But otherwise, I agree that view one is what's required by the financial statements. So I just want to clarify.
Michael.
Can I just say that the original wording that we had there, I read as being a conditional requirement. In other words, we're saying it may have to. Now, if in certain circumstances it would find itself having to give certain disclosures, whereas in other circumstances it might not. And so I suppose, contrary perhaps, Tom, to your view that you expressed earlier, I would say that this does say you have to give it, but it would depend on the circumstances.
Tom?
Be better reflected in the wording then. Because what you explain now is more clear to me, to be honest, than what we read from the drafted wording. So the conditional element you mentioned, I would like to include in the wording then.
Let's take that offline, then we'll see if we can do something. I take Bonnie's point and a couple others. What if accounting is always troublesome? I took Michael's reading that you may be confronted with a need for additional disclosure. You may not, and I didn't take it any farther than that. But we'll take it offline on that. Philippe, last call.
I don't find it very helpful to have may if we don't say when. So I think what you mean is when material, I guess, because I don't see what other conditions may trigger disclosures except from materiality. Do you have anything else in mind, Michael?
Straight off the top of my head, I would say if you didn't expect continuing transactions between the two, then that might also be a circumstance where you wouldn't need to give this sort of pro forma type information.
So,
I think it's a good idea, as Wayne suggests, to sort of take it offline and think about the best way of crafting it. But my thought, just off the top of my head, would be if we can find general principles either in IFRS 5 or IS 1 about ensuring that you've got relevant information to help people understand blah, 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 blah. That would be the thing that maybe we should emphasize to provide the link, because I think it's hard to specify the when, but we can certainly emphasise, because the starting, not very objective-based, but this opening gambit in terms of disclosures on in IFRS 5 is an entity shall present information to enable users of financial statements to evaluate the effects of. And we could maybe use that as our anchor.
The alternative is take the paragraph out altogether. Just, we just drop it. If we're having this much trouble determining what it says, or how much more we need to say, do we just drop it? Just take it out. Philippe?
I would support that, because it seems to me, reading again, when we talk in this paragraph about the financial effects of discontinued operations, I'm not quite sure whether we talk about the effect of discontinuing the operations when selling, i.e. what loss is recognized or what profit might be, whatever, or is it the intra-group transactions we are addressing here? It's not very clear, unless we specify intra-group.
I have to say, when I found myself re-explaining what Michael had said, it didn't sound nearly as good coming out of me as it did out of you. How many would, let me just put it to the vote, how many would take it out? Take out that paragraph from the agenda decision.
Five.
Wow, okay. So well, then second plan is if there's everybody else supports it, we'll take it offline and circulate what we come up with. Is that acceptable? Okay. Now we're on 2D.
Yes.
Using dummy.
So the purpose of this paper, 2B, is to propose to the Interpretations Committee to close the medium to longer term issues through the gender decision process. We think that such an action is important because it acknowledges that the issues remain unresolved, but that the Interpretations Committee would no longer discuss these issues in the short term, or unless and until there is a request to do so by the ISB. And through the gender decision process, the Interpretations Committee can solicit comments on the decision not to address these issues in the short term. The issues subject to an agenda decision in this paper are those issues that are other than short-term issues, because two of the short-term issues are processed through separate agenda decisions, as you just agreed. Another short-term issue is in the hands of the ISB as an annual improvement item. There are two issues out of 11 that did not originate through a submission to the Interpretations Committee. We think that the agenda decision should also cover these two issues because these are also longer-term issues, and the Interpretations Committee has no plan to discuss these in the short term. Consequently, we recommend that the Interpretations Committee should proceed with an agenda decision with respect to the medium to longer-term issues. So the questions to you are, do you agree with the staff analysis to close all these? And if the answer is yes, do you agree with the proposed wordings in Appendix A?
Jumping to Chairman's privilege, I was just looking at the wording in the agenda decision. Would it be useful or accurate to note that this was included in the agenda consultation? Just to tie the loop so that people say, okay, well, what happened to it? Well, it's in the agenda consultation. So we could add that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Other comments on this? Bob?
Yeah. I don't disagree with not discussing this in the short term, but as was mentioned, we might come back to this someday. I thought at least some of the medium-term ones, although it wasn't described here which ones are medium-term, which ones are long-term, that, you know, after the agenda consultation and board discussion, that if the board didn't take these up, maybe we should take these up again, personal view. But that would seem to be a bit prohibited with some of the wording that's in the agenda decision, such as addressing these issues would require our a broader scope project than the interpretation committee could undertake, which if we have that language in here, if we ever take these up again, well, people can come back to us and say, well, no, you can't take those up. You already decided this was broader than you could undertake. So I guess I would be more of softening this into a more of a, we're deferring this.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Tony?
Oh, just to combine what Bob said, what you said. If we're going to refer to the agenda consultation, then we could not take them on pending the outcome of the agenda consultation or something like that. So I do wonder, it's more point I wouldn't object strongly, whether we can make a decision on things we haven't talked about. So the two issues that didn't come to the committee that were raised with the board, I'm not sure we can actually make a decision on things that we never actually talked about.
Picky detail. Martin?
I have an issue with issue number one. If we go to agenda paper number two and read paragraph A6, we say that the interpretation committee observed that the count objective for the scope of the held for sale classification in IFRS 5 is to capture non-current assets over which an entity is committed to lose control irrespective of the form of the transaction other than abandonment. So it seems to be that we have at least in part already answered some of the questions. So if, for example, I sell a call option which is deeply in the money, I'm committed, I've made it public and so on, I would say, okay, I have to apply IFRS 5. With that wording here, we soften, so to say, a little bit out of our understanding and what we have discussed in the past. I agree that we have an issue with probably dilution, and we might consider whether this is continuing use or not. But with regard to other constructions, so to say, how to divest something, I believe that we are closer to be clear on that than that we have no idea how to account for that.
Okay, we're treading perilously close to reopening all these and having another go at them, and I don't think that was our intention. It wasn't the staff's intention. John?
I think just a couple of comments. I think the items not discussed by the committee shouldn't be part of our agenda decision. I agree with Tony's point. I also think that if we're going to issue an agenda decision that sort of is saying, you know, these are being dealt with through the agenda consultation, I think we need a little more detail. I mean, we understand what these issues are because we debated them over many meetings, but in a public interpretation, I don't think there's enough detail about what these issues actually raised with us were. So, I mean, that obviously risks lengthening the agenda decision, but I think each of them needs a little more detail about the matter that was actually submitted to us.
Okay, I take the point that we'll delete the ones that weren't subject to a decision or a discussion, but are, I think, contemplated in the agenda consultation. So we'll clean that up. The last time we did one of these sort of omnibus agenda decisions, we wound up breaking it down and publishing it as a series of individual agenda decisions, and I don't see us wanting to do that here, but I've heard several people say, yeah, you got to talk more about some of these. So do I have three volunteers to help the staff do that before we get in the process of reworking this for update? Bruce, are you volunteering?
No, I'm happy to volunteer. I guess my concern is just the approach. And I'll tell you why. Because what's worrying me about this is if we feel we need to break this up and start giving a lot more detail, what we're really doing is we're going to start issuing much more detailed agenda consultations. And I guess once we go down that road, I think we're back into what your concern was earlier. We're going to reopen all of these. You know, I think this is, to me, this is a different situation. This is saying, guys, we've got a parking lot. And until the agenda consultation is resolved, We're parking it. I just get worried if we start breaking this up into a series of things and doing more detail. I can tell you now, this is going to another IFRS 11. We're going to be talking about this in 3 years' time. I would almost say, maybe let's just outline that. We haven't given details. There's a whole lot of issues coming to us at the moment on IFRS 5. We're waiting for the gender consultation to be resolved. Once that has, the Interpretations Committee will determine a way forward. That is it.
Yeah.
I'd be opposed to doing it. I'm happy to help if they want it done, but I'm not convinced.
So your proposal would be not even to list them individually?
Yeah, I think the list is actually just going to make people ask more questions than is there. I would just make this succinct. This is a parking lot. We'll address it once the AC is done.
I see a couple of heads nodding yes. So that would be essentially a watch this space.
Mm. Is what we want to communicate.
Without listing the individual issues. How many would favor that approach?
Can I just say, I would have a concern about us going down that route, partly because we've pulled out two specific ones to do separate agenda decisions on, and I think it would be less clear for people as to what these other ones are that we've parked for the time being pending the agenda consultation if we didn't at least describe the ones that have been discussed by the Interpretations Committee.
Okay, well, I think that is the default then. Again, I'm asking for 3 volunteers to help with drafting. Bruce, John, Tony. Sue?
Just on Martin's point, though, because I think what we, for example, if I use the one that Martin used, which was the, you know, what's the scope, what's in the scope of a disposal, I thought that the committee was pretty, from memory, clear on what they thought the words were. There was then a question of, is that what the board meant or not? But I think everybody sort of agreed on where we got to. I guess we just, in looking at the drafting, the 3 people helping, I think it would be good not to suggest that that question's maybe more open than we thought we concluded. Because sometimes when it says, you know, this is still up, and particularly if it's got the tagline and it's too broad in scope, it might sound like we think that there's a massive big open issue which could worsen the situation rather than help.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought we were going to remove the
liberal,
potentially restrictive wording.
Yeah.
Potentially restricting ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we'll do. Y'all will see, all y'all will see. No, some of y'all are going to help.
Oh.
All y'all will see it when you see update. Okay. Are we done with that issue? All right, then we move. We have a break scheduled. Now let's take a quick one. Back at 20 minutes after, 10 minute break.